Well, good morning. It's really good to be with you again. It does seem a very long time since I was here, but I always think of Long Buckby with great warmth and affection. So it's great to be back. And you had my colleague, Colin Pye, last week. We're very different. We get on extremely well, but we are different. So Colin, as you will have experienced, is very demonstrative and, you know, and he plays the guitar, and some of you might remember I play the bassoon. So that, how about that for a difference, you know, guitar, bassoon. Anyway, it's really good to be here, and thank you for your greeting. And on behalf of the Central Baptist Association, I bring warm greetings to you. The Central Baptist Association has a grants committee which is responsible for making grants to a small number of churches that otherwise would not be able to afford paid ministry. Over the last couple of years, we've begun to assess the effectiveness of these grants, and the committee came up with 7 fruitfulness indicators that those churches will be asked to reflect upon. It struck us, though, that it shouldn't only be those churches receiving a grant that are encouraged to reflect, but all of our churches. And so we produced a special edition of Central News, which we offer as a starting point. As the regional minister and team leader, I write, it would be wonderful if all our churches were in an ongoing conversation about their fruitfulness and effectiveness within the local community. And we would encourage you in your particular situation to rise to the challenge, celebrating the past and engaging creatively with the future. Excuse me. And this is of a piece with what I want to speak on this morning, which is fruitfulness. On the 18th of July 2005, the Colmer family moved from Melton Mowbray, the land of the pork pie, to Milton Keynes, you could say the land of the roundabouts. It was only the second time that we had been in the house, the first being when we looked around it in the company of the estate agent. We liked the house very much the first time, and I have to say we haven't changed our minds since. However, it's inevitable that the first time you look around, you simply don't see all that's there. This can be a good thing, and it can be a bad thing. Well, for us, this was a good thing because one of those things we discovered at the bottom of our garden in a sun trap was our very own vine. This is not the vine, okay? Let's be very clear. This is not the vine. But we did have our own vine at the bottom of the garden. It provoked the question, what do you do with a vine? Well, that was answered shortly after because the Central Baptist Association appointed a youth development worker who happened also to be a horticulturalist. And when John came to the house for one of our regular meetings, I was able to say to him, John, tell me, what do you do with a vine? And he was a source of very useful information. I'd really like to say to you that as a result, we now have a fruitful vine at the bottom of our garden, which provides an annual yield of fruit sufficient to make gobsmackingly delicious red wine. I'm afraid that's another story, but I did learn a number of things on the way. Jesus says, I am the vine. He had just finished the last meal with the disciples in the upper room where he had broken bread and poured out wine, the fruit of the vine. Maybe they were still in that upper room, or maybe they were on their way to the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus saw a vine growing by the side of the road as they walked, and this prompted the remark. They may have even passed the temple, where on one of the great gates of the temple was a golden vine. Whatever, The vine was a prominent image in Israel. It was a national symbol, a bit like a shamrock or a thistle, and even appeared on their coins. And the Old Testament contains a number of references to Israel as the vine. But it needs to be said that nearly always the references are negative ones, as we heard in that reading from Isaiah chapter 5. The fact is that Israel had failed to be fruitful in the God-given role she was called to fulfill as a light to the nations. Israel, so it seemed, absorbed too readily the gods of the other nations rather than proclaim her God, the one and only God, to the nations. So the vine in relation to Israel spoke of moral and spiritual decline and a failure to be fruitful as the missionary people that God intended them to be. It's into this context that Jesus says, I am the vine. Jesus is the true vine. He is the one who would be fruitful and fulfill God's mission, and through whom the nations would be reached, and through whom, in the words of God to Abraham, all peoples on earth will be blessed. Now, here's the thing. Just a bit further on in John's Gospel, after Jesus' death and resurrection, he says these words. He says, as the Father has sent me, so I send you. We are sent in the same way as Jesus in order to be fruitful. The Church of Jesus Christ, made up of individuals, exists in part to be fruitful. And we see this in Jesus' constant emphasis in this passage in John's Gospel upon bearing fruit and being fruitful. So a mini summary. The vine exists to be fruitful. Israel as the vine was unfruitful in her God-given calling to be a light to the nations. Jesus as the true vine was fruitful. And as Jesus was sent, so we are sent. You and I are sent to be fruitful. Well, the question I want to explore with you this morning, just for a few moments, is this one. How can this fruitfulness be sustained? And I give you three suggestions. We are fruitful through friendship with Jesus. We are fruitful through pruning by the Father, and we are fruitful through loving one another. So first of all, we are fruitful through friendship with Jesus. In verses 4 and 5, Jesus says, abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing. Other translations, including the translation that we read from this morning, speak of remaining and abide in me. It might sound a bit antiquated, possibly reminding you of the FA Cup final or funerals when abide with me is sung somewhat mournfully. But this notwithstanding, I think it's a far richer word than remain. Jesus is talking about relationship, not just a casual relationship. Jesus is talking about us abiding in him. And importantly, Jesus abiding in us. It's not Jesus saying, abide in me or else. This is not intimidation. This is promise. He says, abide in me as I abide in you. And what Jesus is speaking here of is a deep and intimate relationship. Already he's spoken to the disciples about the new relationship that he will have with them through the Holy Spirit. And he will go on to describe them movingly as friends. This friendship is absolutely primary. But also, it's the means to being fruitful as we share in Jesus' mission. We cannot bear fruit on our own. It is not possible. Grapes on a vine cannot grow without being part of the vine. They don't just happen. Being fruitful can only come through our connectedness with Christ by abiding. Now, three things just to touch upon briefly. Firstly, this abiding, this relationship, this friendship is one of obedience. Jesus says, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. This is not friendship with Jesus and do whatever you like. This is friendship with Jesus and do what Jesus likes. Now, does this mean that Jesus stops loving us if we disobey him? Well, no, never. Of course it doesn't. Jesus' hold on us never loosens, even if our hold on him does. But we will want to do what Jesus wants to do. So obedience. The second thing is one of joy. Joy is a word which is often associated with wine in the Old Testament. Jesus says, I've said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. We're to obey Jesus' commands, but actually this is no hardship. On the contrary, like wine, it gladdens the heart. And the third thing to touch upon is it's one of being in tune. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, Jesus says, ask for whatever you wish and it will be done for you. Now, Jesus is not issuing a blank check. He is not saying that he will give us anything we ask. What he is saying is that if we are abiding intimately, we will be in tune with God so that our longing will be in harmony with his purposes. And so prayer will be answered. And this morning I want to encourage you to know this deep friendship, this abiding in Christ, and to nurture it. I said a few moments ago, it's absolutely primary. And also, it's the means to being effective in sharing in the mission of Jesus as we obey him, as his joy fills our lives, and as we express intimacy with him in prayer. So that's the first thing to say. We're fruitful through friendship with Jesus. The second is that we're fruitful through pruning by the Father. Jesus says, I am the true vine and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. I think it's easy to read this passage as a passage of judgment and threat. But we are to keep in mind that this is all to do with context. Remember, Jesus is speaking these words to his disciples on the eve of his crucifixion. He knows what is going to happen, both to himself, but also to his disciples, and they do not. They are about to be cut down by his crucifixion and death. And Jesus is assuring them that this will not be a senseless cutting, but that they will survive, and more than survive, they will even flourish. And then to those to whom John wrote his gospel, well, they were a community who were under persecution, and they felt that they were being cut down because they were friends of Jesus. So we've got this double context here. Vines, like roses, need pruning. Pruning helps them to grow in the right direction. I'm not a gardener, but I'm informed that pruning stops them wasting energy and conserves their life so that they can produce good quality grapes and not second-rate ones. And pruning has to be radical. Anything that does not bear fruit needs drastic action. But this pruning is not simply to get rid of. This pruning is to make more fruitful. It's all about the fruit. Everything's about the fruit. Over the years, I've found these words a bit hard to take, if I'm honest with you. But I find them words to be true. Pleasant experiences make life delightful. Painful experiences lead to growth. The pruning can be painful as it comes to us through life's experiences, which the father, the gardener, chooses to use. But just as in horticulture, the harder the pruning, the greater the fruitfulness, so I've observed in the Christian life. I am not saying for one moment that God intends suffering. I am not saying that suffering is ever good. But I am saying that God may work through it to continue to grow us, to make us fruitful in our relationship with his son and in our effectiveness in sharing in his mission. So we're fruitful through friendship with Jesus. We're fruitful through pruning by the Father. And then we're fruitful through loving one another. Jesus says, love one another as I have loved you. With the cross only hours before him, loving the disciples meant laying down his life for them. This love is a love that gives of itself even to death. It's a costly self-sacrificial love. It's a steadfast love. It's a faithful love. It's an unconditional love. And this is the love that Jesus commands of his disciples then and today. And we need it in the church. I need to stress again that loving one another is not a means to an end. It's an end in itself. Love never needs to justify itself. One of my favorite stories is of John the Apostle. And when John was an old man, a very old man, and became so weak that he could no longer preach, he used to be carried into the congregation at Ephesus, and he would exhort little children, love one another. And when his hearers grew sick and tired of hearing the same old message again and again and again, and when they asked him why he so frequently repeated it, he responded, because it is the Lord's command, and if this is all you do, it is enough. It is enough just to love. Think of the great commandment. But, as Jesus says earlier in John's Gospel, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. It's been observed that the command to love one another is not a domestic policy of the church only. It's its foreign policy. And the reality is that we are commanded to love one another when it's easy and when it's a pleasure and when it's difficult and a pain. We will love those we think are lovely and those who we think are unlovely. We will love those who deserve to be loved and those who don't. We will love those who think that we are wonderful and marvelous and those who don't. And we will do this because this is what Jesus does and what Jesus commands us to do. And we will do this because it will bear fruit in sharing in his mission. It was said of the early Christians, see how these Christians love one another. I remember the first time I heard that, you know, I had that sort of warm glow in my heart. I thought, oh, that's a good thing. But you know, they said some far less complimentary things about the early Christians as well. Documented, you know, it's actually there as evidence. See how these Christians tear one another apart, things like that. And actually, that should come as no surprise, because that sort of thing is borne out in the letters of the New Testament, which repeatedly showed Christians failing to love one another. That passage most loved by those getting married, you know, 1 Corinthians 13. I mean, it's beautiful, sublime poetry. But it's in the context of a congregation not loving each other. It's there because that's what they needed to do. It was precisely the thing that they weren't doing. And the reality is that nearly 2,000 years on, nothing's changed. It's exactly the same today, because loving sounds lovely, but actually it's blooming hard work. Now, I've been in this role for a long time now. I'm in my 15th year. I've been the minister of two churches. I love the church, but I have no illusions about the church. We find it hard to love one another. We like the idea of loving, but the reality, it's a bit different. And it's the same across the board. There are no perfect churches. We find loving very difficult to do. As I say, it sounds lovely, but it's always really, really, really hard work. But it's necessary. It's really important. It's vital. And it's a work that's always in progress. We never get there. You know, we're always on the journey. So fruitfulness. The edition of Central News that I mentioned at the beginning, it identifies seven indicators of fruitfulness. I think they're really helpful. We tend to look just at statistics, and this looks far more deeply and in a more nuanced way. And if you've still got a copy of that, and I think that there are copies still around, on the back page there are practical next steps that can be taken, looking at where we are, where we could be, and where we will be. God's intention is that we are fruitful as we reach out to God's world with God's love in the power of God's Spirit. For us today at Long Buckby Baptist Church, my prayer is that you will be fruitful, that you'll continue to be fruitful through abiding friendship with Jesus and He with you, as you're pruned by the Father through life's experiences, and as you undertake that so costly work of loving one another. I'm going to pause for a moment and then lead us in a short prayer before we sing together.